Okay, so we will begin Malachim Beis, Perek Tes Vav, Pasuk Ches. We had left off reading about the long reign of Azariah, who is also known as Uzziah. Again, in Sefer Malachim, he's known as Azariah, and Sefer Devar Hayyamim, he's known as Uzziah. And we saw that at the end of his life, he was stricken with Saras. And we saw that in Devar Hayyamim it explained because he made the mistake, he made the error of bringing a ketores using part of the avoda that is meant for Kohanim, and he as king took that inappropriately. But what we now do is we're going to shift back to the kingdom of the north, and if ever there was a shir in our whole curriculum where we have more names of kings thrown to us in one night, it's going to be tonight. Basically, we're at the tail end. We're towards the tail end of the Northern Kingdom. We're now in Perek Tes Vav. In Perek Yud Zayin, which is only two prakim away, that's where the end, unfortunately, of the 10 tribes takes place. The final, when they're led out to exile. It's almost, and this is the seed that I'm planting within our minds before we read these psukim, the great upheaval, that there's one revolt after another revolt after another revolt. It shows how that the northern kingdom was, you know, if it was a stock, so you'd see the red going deeply, you know, diving deeply until the end. And each revolt just shows the instability, the lack of any type of real dynasties anymore. We don't see it. We see one succession from a father to a son, and it doesn't even last that long. So it's definitely very very sad. And that's one, the psukim on the one hand seem very dry because it's very just technical. Like this person became king, then there's a revolt. So we'll have to try to pull out, you know, a couple of the nuggets within it. But also the fact that this hasn't happened before, that it's one king after the other king, it's definitely showing us something. So we begin with Pasuk Ches. Bishnah Shloshim Ushmona Shana L'Azaryahu Melch Yehuda was in the 38th year of the reign of Azariah, the king of Yehuda. Malach Zechariahu ben Yeravam al Yisrael. Zechariahu, the son of Yeravam, became king of the north, Bishomron, in the capital city of Shomron, Shisha Chadashim. And he was only king for 6 months. 6 months becomes, you know, it's not the shortest reign of a king, but it's up there. The Radak quickly notes that while the Tanakh considers him ruling for only 6 months, the Radak quotes that he actually ruled for 3 years during his father's lifetime. During 3 years of Yeravam's lifetime, Yeravam wasn't active on the throne to such an extent, and his son Zechariah was king. But in terms of the official time after his father had died, it was only a six-month time that this Zechariah was king. Now, this Zechariah was the fourth generation, the fourth in the dynasty of Yehu ben Nimshi, who had been chosen by Hashem through Nevuah that he should lead a revolt, the last king in Malchus Yisrael to have a mandate from Hashem was Yehu. And Yehu was promised through Nevuah that his dynasty would go down four generations. This Zechariah is the fourth. This Zechariah is the fourth. And the Pasuk is going to take note of it, but it's striking. Yehu was not promised that the fourth within 6 months is going to be gotten rid of. This individual, who we don't know much about, Zechariah, he could have had a longer reign. His father Yeravam reigned for 41 years. He could have had a longer reign, and it was mandated by Nevuah that he had to be the last king. But it wasn't necessarily mandated that he had to be assassinated, that there had to be a revolt, that there had to be anything in his first year. He could have lived a nice 25-year reign, and then he's no longer king, and then and then there's a revolt at his death. He obviously took actions and was deserving of the fact that it would happen in his lifetime, very, very in the beginning of his reign as king, as I said before, 6 months. Pasuk Tes. Vayas hara be'inei Hashem, he did what was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Ka'asher asu avosav, just as his forefathers had done, He was no change. Again, we always say that, and it's almost like a broken record now. There could have always been change. Every king has the power, physically, has the mandate and physically has the power that they could change. And he didn't. Losar mechatos Yeravim ben Nevat. He did not turn away from the sins of Yeravim ben Nevat, Asher Hechti Es Yisrael, who had caused Klal Yisrael to sin, the main thing of holding Klal Yisrael back from being able to go to Beis HaMikdash, and then all of the Avodah Zarah that was an outgrowth of that. So it seems from the Psukim that he did nothing worse than anyone else, but and he's just as bad. So then you ask your question, you know, why was he deserving that only after 6 months? Again, it's hard to explain that. Pasuk Yud. Vayikshar Olav Shalom ben Yavesh. It was an individual named Shalom, the son of Yavesh, who conspired. He came up with a plan against this Zechariah, who was the king. Vayakehu Koval Om, Vayimisehu, Vayimloch Tachtov. Vayakehu, he killed him, he struck him. Koval Om is a strange phrase, which the Targum says it's the Mitzudos Tzion says it's the Targum, it's a translation of the word Neged. Neged means in front of, opposite of. That he struck him kind of out in the open. That it was not done Kaval opposite or opposite the people, that it was done in what we would call, you know, the public. It was not a secret assassination. You could imagine, it's almost like the Pasuk is making it sound like he, you know, the whole thing happened in slow motion, that everyone was able to see. Everyone could have stopped this assassination, but no one stepped forward. That this was not, it wasn't just a rogue individual in the country trying to usurp power, but it must mean that there was some type of, and this is some of the Mefarshim explain, that we're trying to read between the lines, it must mean there was some type of consensus, that even though he was only king for 6 months, no one was happy. No one was happy with him, and an assassination was able to take place in broad daylight. Vayimisehu, he killed him, vayimloch tachtov, and he ruled in place of him. This, in a way, begins a time where the kings of Malchus Yisrael are no longer ruling because Hashem gave them permission. Every king, or at least every beginning dynasty, was kind of encouraged by Hashem, either through a Navi that we heard of. Even going back to Yeravim ben Nevat, Yeravim ben Nevat was told that after Shlomo's death, he's going to becoming king. That he is becoming king. That came from Hashem. Yeravim ended up turning into a terrible Rasha. That happened after the fact. But this ends the mandate coming from Hashem, to which the Talmud Yerushalmi actually explains that technically, on a halachic level, these people are no longer referred to as a king, necessarily. And the Gemara uses a type of word. I tried looking up the Yerushalmi inside. I could not find it. So the English word that I have is some type of usurper, like a usurper, someone who just took it, someone who didn't have any rights. Now, none of these individuals had rights based on their lineage, because we've already... Once the kingdom broke into two, we broke away from the only lineage that has a right to is from Malchus Beis David. But there was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave permission. So that ended, and these assassinations, most of them are not coming to save the people. They're mostly coming for a person who wants power. You want power, you have to kill the individual who currently has the power. And we're going to see that this individual named Shalom, he was deserted. He was not righteous at all, and his reign of king ends up being less than the person he just killed. The person he just killed on record, Zechariahu, on official record, has 6 months, and his assassin, Shalom, is going to end up ruling for only 1 month to take second place in the history of Klal Yisrael, the shortest reign of king. He takes second place. The shortest was way back when there was a king who led a revolt that only lasted for 7 days, named Zimri, who was killed by Ahab's father Omri. So that was a seven day king. And they say a folk story about this a very chash of a Jew in Poland whose name was Katzenela Mogen. And the folk story is that he became officially king of Poland for a day, something, there was some type of lapse in who the king was. He's a relative of mine. I mean, there's a famous book called The Unbroken Chain. It's a 2-volume Yichus book in English about everyone who comes from the Maharam Mipadua, who was Mayor Katzenelenbogen. So a grandson or a great grandson was this, I think his name was Shaul, and he officially became king of Poland just for a day. And then this book is full of all of his descendants. There are like thousands or millions of them, and my family is one of them. I'm sure maybe even someone here is, or someone in the shul is. So these individuals, this Shalom, he got what was coming to him because he was only king for just 1 month. Pasuk Yud Aleph. The Yeser Divrei Zechariah, the other aspects of Zechariah, what he did in his time of ruling. Hinam Ksuvim, behold, they're written al Sefer Divrei Hayam L'Malchi Yisrael. They're written in the chronicles, the daily chronicles of the kings of Israel. Hu Dvar Hashem. This was Dvar Hashem. This was a fulfillment of Dvar Hashem. His assassination, not necessarily the assassination, but the fact that he would not have a son who would rule after him, that aspect is a fulfillment of Dvar Hashem. Asher Diber al Yehu Lemor, which was spoken to the great-great-grandfather Yehu, saying, B'nei Re'ivim Yesh V'lecha al Kisei Yisrael, that the fourth generation, the fourth level of descendants, they will sit on the throne of Israel. Ba'yichein, and it was so. And it almost makes it sound like the only reason why any of these kings were able to be king was because of Yehu. That Yehu was deserving to lead that revolt. He was chosen. He was handpicked from the entire country by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to lead the revolt, and he was anointed by a Navi. He was the last king anointed by, he was the last king in Malchus Yisrael anointed by a Navi. And so, Pasuk is putting the stress that it was only because of what he did that he was blessed with 4 generations would go ahead and would have the throne. Pasuk Yud Gimel. So there's the revolt after 6 months. Shalom ben Yavesh Malach Bishnah Shloshim Vatesha Shana Luziah Melech Yehuda. So now we read about Shalom, the son of Yavesh. He ruled in the 39th year of Uziah, who was the king of the south. So, and it's always this contrast. The south is going during the time of Uziah. Uziah was king for 52 years. And so the south is screaming stability, and the north is screaming instability. Vayimloch, and he ruled Yerach Yamim Bishomron. Yerach Yamim, as the Mitzvah Sion says, Yerach is a language like the moon of a Chodesh. Shehu Nimna b'mahalach HaYerach. He went with the entire count of the moon. One full cycle of the moon, 1 month, that's it. That's all that he ruled. Pasuk Yudalid. Vayal Menachem ben Gadi. So Menachem ben Gadi went up. Mitirza. He was from the town of Tirza. Vayavo Shomron, and he came to Shomron. Vayaches Shalom ben Yavesh b'Shomron, and he assassinated Shalom, the son of Yavesh, in Shomron. Vayimiseu vayimloch tachtov, and he killed him, and he reigned in his place. So in a matter of a couple of months, literally, you know, a little bit over 30 days, there's one assassination, and then another assassination. And so now the king is Menachem ben Gadi. He comes from Tirza. So the one thing that we know about Tirza is that Tirza was, it's probably left our minds, but Tirza was the old capital city of Malchus Yisrael. Tirza was the city that Zimri, that king who was king for only 7 days that we spoke about, he had a palace in Tirza. It was there that Omri, the father of Ahav, surrounded the palace, put the palace on fire, literally killed through fire the sitting king. And then Omri had this job of needing to build a new capital city. And it was Omri's idea to move the capital from Tirza to Shomron. And it had been in the city of Shomron from the time of the last couple of years of Omri. And then you have Ahav and his dynasty, and then Yehu and his dynasty. You're talking, I'm just throwing out the number. It's probably been 150 years that the capital city has now been in Shomron. I have not seen anybody talk about this. I wonder if there's any ill feelings. The fact that this Menachem ben Gadi came from Tirza, I wonder if there was ever ill feelings amongst the people of Tirza that they lost the capital city. It could be that that was some type of extra motivation for this. Obviously, this Menachem ben Gadi has, you know, he wants the power. He wants the power for himself. It's just a theory. But the fact that the pasuk didn't tell us where Shalom came from, right? The first assassin that we read about back in Pasuk Yud, it just tells us his name and his father's name, but it doesn't say where he came from. Here, when we're introduced to the next assassin, was Menachem ben Gadi, who's going to have a little more success because he's king for a little bit more time, and he does have a son take over for him. Here, we're told where he comes from. So I don't know. Maybe the fact that we know where he comes from is telling that he had a little edge. He doesn't move the cap. I'll disprove myself a little bit that he doesn't move the capital back to Tirza, but take my thought for what it's worth. Pasuk Tazvav. V'yeser divrei Shalom. I don't know how many they could have been. The other aspects of his reign, the kishra asher kashar, and some of the details of the rebellion that he led, hinam ksuvim al sefer divrayon l'malchi Yisrael, they could be found in the daily chronicles of the kings of Israel. Oz, at that point, yake Menachem es tifsach. This Menachem, as seemingly some of the first acts of him being king, he launched an attack against the city called Tifsach, the Eskola Sherba, everything that was in it, the Esgivuleha Mitirza, that from Tirza he led an attack against this town of Tifsach, Kilofasach, because they had not opened up, Vayach, and he struck Eskol Haroseha Bikea. He struck all of the pregnant women of the town. This is one explanation we'll discuss. This city, the Mepharshim point out, the Radak and others, this city of Tifsach was not a Yiddish city. It was not a city in Eretz Yisrael. It was right over the border, and it was in Aram. It was in Aram, the nation that has been the constant enemy of the north. This city belonged to Aram. And apparently this Menachem, as one of his first acts of being king, wanted to create some type of, like, a vassal city. That this city of Tifsach, it would officially be Aram, but they would pay their taxes not to Damascus, they would pay their taxes to Malchus Yisrael. And he approached the city, and they did not want to recognize him as their king or as their ruler. And so he attacked the city. He killed many of the inhabitants. And there's a machlokas, how to understand that last phrase. The way that the article translates, Vayachas kol herosa bikea, so that's Rashi's translation. Rashi's translation that the word herosa from, like, the language of harion, of pregnancy, that as an extra punishment, he gathered the pregnant women and killed them in a despicable and disgraceful act. You know, perhaps it's saying that not only we're killing you, but if we're killing the pregnant women, we're like killing your future. We're totally, you know, this was not appropriate at all. The alternative explanation that the Ralbag and the Radak give kind of mitigate it, because instead of talking about destroying people, they see the word har, they see the word mountain in that word, and they say mountains means that the defenses of the city, if they were not necessarily mountains like we would call mountains, but even hills or high points that the city used as its protection, one of the things Menachem did, he destroyed that. Not only did he attack the city, but he also destroyed the surrounding geographical benefits to the city. Some of the mountains that surrounded the city he destroyed. So that's a little bit more. It's a little bit more pyrif. Now, why we're told this pasuk before we're given, right? We're about to read Pasuk Yud Zayin. Pasuk Yud Zayin is the normal way to introduce us to a king, that in such and such year of the king of the south, there was a new king in the north. Why did Pasuk Tazayin have to be out of order? I'm not sure. It definitely out of order, because we're seeing, unless I don't necessarily know why we're being told that. It should really be, unless it's trying to say he did it right away. He really did it right away. But again, what were gained, unless that's just how it happened. Because Pasuk Yud Zayin, that's the normal Pasuk. Bishna Shloshim V'Teisha Shana, in the 39th year, La'azariah Melech Yehuda, to Azariah the king of Yehuda in the south, Malach Menachem Ben Gadi, Al Yisrael, Eser Shanim B'Shomron. This Menachem Ben Gadi was ruled over the northern kingdom of Yisrael for 10 years. So relative to the previous two kings, that's a decent amount of time. The last king was 1 month, and the king before that was 6 months. So 10 years, that seems like a lifetime in comparison. And this would be the normal starting point of a pasuk. So you would have expected that if he's going to attack a city of Aram, it should come afterwards. Okay, it's a question. Pasuk Yud Ches. Vayas hara b'nei Hashem, and this Menachem who. It's confusing because we're gonna have a king named Menashe. The names are so close. Vayasara b'nei Hashem, he did what was evil in the eye of Hashem. Lo sar me'al chatos Yerovim ben Nevat asher hechtis Yisrael kol yomav. He did not remove any of the sins of Yerovim ben Nevat that Yerovim did all of his days. And here comes something, a small piece of information, and from the small piece of information we have to take a lot. Pasuk Yud Tes. Ba ful melech Ashur al ha'aretz. The king of Ashur, the king of Assyria, came to the land. His name here is Ful, Pei Vav Lamed. There's no dot. So in our Tanakh it says Ful, and in the English translation it pronounces him as Pul. I don't know why that's so. In addition, we're going to, in a couple of psukim, we're going to be introduced to another king of Ashur. And that time, when we're introduced to the other king of Ashur, his name is a little more longer. His name is Tiglas Pileser. But some of the commentators note that it was actually the same individual. That the name Ful was like some type of nickname for the king. Now, it sounds like the king is coming on his own. The Pasuk makes it sound like this king of Assyria came on his own. But the Mefarshim and Chazal understand that he was invited. He was invited to the kingdom by Menachem. Well, why would the king of Israel invite the king of Assyria? So let's keep reading. Pasuk. So he arrives. Vayite Menachem leful. Menachem gives to Ful elef kikar kesef. He gives 1,000 talents of silver, lios yadav ito, so that his hands should be with him. Lahachzik hamamlacha biyado. He's seeking someone to provide him protection. He wants to pay off the neighboring king Assyria, the neighboring king of Ashur, in order that Ashur will stand by him, and not just be an ally. But it seems that it'll be someone to protect him, l'hachzik hamamlacha, to keep the monarchy, right? So, on the one hand, he did right. But on the other hand, which is the majority, he did terrible. The part that he got right is that he picked the king that was, and he picked the kingdom that was only growing. The superpower of the region is about to become Ashur. Over these years, Ashur, which is more north, is going to become more powerful, not only in their conquest against Malchus Yisrael, their conquest of the whole region. That Assyria, Ashur, is going to become the most powerful nation in that region. So at first blush, we would say, at least if he's going to align himself with someone, he did it well. He picked well. The fact that he aligned himself with anyone is considered to be wrong. Now, not only did he decide to pay off this individual, the king of Ashur, but he decided not necessarily to use his own money. Pasachaf. Vayotze Menachem es hakesef. Menachem collected and went out that the money should come al Yisrael, the money should come against or from Klal Yisrael. Al kol gibore chayil against the tax was first hit against the officers, the strong officers. Laseis lemalach asher chamishim shkalim. Each one had to give 50 shkalim kesef, 50 shekel of kesef, leish echad for each person. And this was to pay off the king. And what happened? By Yashav Melech Ashur. He left. He took the money and went back. V'lo amad sham ba'aretz. He didn't remain there. It was a failed. It was a failed attempt at getting an ally to protect him. And instead, this king of Ashur did what was his eyes was smart. He took the money and ran, went back home, providing no protection, providing no ability to, that as the pasuk said, lahachsa kamam lacha biyado. The yeser divrei Menachem, the other aspects of Menachem's rule, v'chol asheras, everything they did, haluhim k'suvim, they're written al sefer divrei ayyam l'malchi Yisrael in that book of chronicles of the king. Vayishkav Menachem amavosav, Menachem died with his forefathers. The fact that it puts it that way, maybe, first of all, he died a natural death, and maybe he wasn't buried in Shomron, maybe he was buried back in Tirza, where he had come from. Vayimloch Pekachya beno tachtav. Pekachya, his son, became king in his place. So the fact that he attempted to make a treaty with Ashur is considered very significant. If you take a look at the sheet of sources that I put together for this evening. So the first source comes from the book of Yechezkel. It's the sheet that looks like this, with only Hebrew on it. The first source comes from the book of Yechezkel, where Yechezkel introduces us to a famous parable, a famous mashal that's given in Yechezkel, and it's quoted in many other places. Pasuk says in Perichav Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, Vahi Dvar Hashem Elai Leimor, that the word of Hashem came to Yechezkel saying, Ben Adam Shtayim Nashim Bonos Eim Achas Hoyu. There was a man who had two wives, and they were both the daughters of one mother. So they were sisters, and they were also the wives of the same individual. Vatiznena b'mitzrayim b'nurehen. And they were promiscuous in Mitzrayim in their youth. Zanu Shama, they did znus, they did promiscuity there. Moache Shedehem, Visham Isui Dade Besulehem. Their bodies were even damaged when they were young. Ushmosan, what were the names of these two women? Ahala Hagdola. The older one was named Ahala. Vahaliva Achosa. And her sister's name was Ahaliva. Vatiana Li, and then they became for me, for my wife. Again, this is a parable. Vateladna banim ubanos, they gave birth to boys and girls. Ushmosan, what were their names? What were the additional names of these wives? Shomron Ahala. The older one's name was Shomron. Yushalayim Ahaliva. And Yushalayim was the name of Ahaliva. So the capital city of the north is Ahala, and the capital city of the south is Ahaliva. And they're both described as first of all, not being so proper in their youth. And this is representative of the mistakes that the kingdom have made. Right? Both kingdoms end up being destroyed. Malchus Yisrael ends up being exiled. Malchus Yehuda ends in Churban Bayis Rishon. Pasuk Hey. Vatizen Ahala Tachtoi. This Ahala, who we had already said is represented by the kingdom of the north, of Shomron, she was Mezana, she committed adultery while still married to me, this Navi Yechezkel is saying. Vata'agav al ma'aveha el Ashur Kerovim. Who were one of her lovers? She became close to Ashur. It's being the approach when the kingdom of the north approaches Ashur, that's being described as adultery. It's being described as adultery against whom? Against Hashem. Take a look at source number two on the sheet, which is Rashi on Sefer Yechezkel, Perichov Gimel. Rashi says on the phrase El Asher Kerovim, Shehayu Shcheinim La. They were next door neighbors. They were bordering each other. Vishalchu Lahem, and the city of the Shomron sent to Ashur, Lios Lahem Le'ezer, that they could be for them for a help. Who is that referred to? Zehaya Menachem Ben Gadi. That's Menachem that we're reading about in Malachim Beis Perek Tesvav. You see, Rashi is quoting us. Shenasan Mas Lefool. He gave a tax to Fool, Melech Ashur, the king of Ashur. Lios Yado Oso, so that he should have his hand with him. Lahachsa Kamalacha Biyado. The Hanavi, and now in Sefer Yechezkel, what is Yechezkel Medame Hadavar? What does he compare this act of Menachem Ben Gadi? Leisha Minaefes, to an adulterous woman. She'im hayu ovdim la'kadosh baruch hu lo nitzrichu l'malchi Ashur. Right? He wants his kingdom to be firm. He wants his kingdom to be strong. So all he had to do is, I'm not saying it's little, lead a tshuva movement. Lead a tshuva movement, put your faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you'll have a dynasty that'll last like David Melech Yisrael. But instead, you choose not to go the path of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You choose to put your alliance, you choose to put your faith in another nation. So the Navi Yechezkel says that's comparable to adultery. And we see it doesn't even work. It doesn't even work because the king takes the money and goes back home. But it could very well be one of the things that we're pulling away from this, the significance for us, is not only are the stories of these kings kind of giving up, that just showing the instability, but here we see that the in the end, who's going to come and destroy the kingdom of the north? It's going to be Ashur. So it's almost, in a way, it's like this divine, obviously it's harsh. Mida k'neged mida, you wanted Ashur to be your friend, they're going to be your enemy. You wanted Ashur to protect you, they're going to be the ones to conquer you. And so while we don't read much about this, about the kingdom of Menachem, but his 10 years, the significant thing that he did was trying to get Ashur to be a friend and a support, and the failure of that. Not just the failure of it that he lost out on all the money that he collected. Again, it wasn't his money, but all the tax that Klal Yisrael had collected was totally lost. But it also plants the seeds for further exile. Pasuk Chaf Gimel. We're now getting to our fourth king of this night. We had Zechariah, we had Shalom, we now had Menachem. And now we're getting to Menachem's son. Bishnas Chamishim Shana LaAzariah Melech Yehuda. Uzziah is still the king of the south. It's his 50th year. Malach Pekachia ben Menachem al Yisrael. The Menachem, Pekachia, the son of Menachem, became king over Klal Yisrael in the north, Bishomron, Shinasayim. And he is king for only 2 years. Vayas hara b'enei Hashem. He did what was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Pasuk of Dalet. Lo sor mechatos yorav menavar asher hechti es Yisrael. It's like a broken record. He did not move from the sins of Yorav menavat, who caused Klal Yisrael to sin. And in those 2 years, it seems he did not do a good enough job solidifying himself as king. Pasuk of Hey. Vayikshar alav Pekach ben Remaliyahu Shalisho. There's an individual named Pekach who's going to assassinate Pekachya. Right? So you have to hold within two psukim, you have to follow the names very clearly. We have Pekach ben Remaliyahu who made a plan. Vayikshar alav, he planned against him a rebellion, Shalisho. But he was his Shalisho, he was his captain. He was someone who was a close officer to the current king. Vayakeu b'Shamron, he struck him down, he killed him in Shamron. Ba'armon beis hamelech, in the palace of the king, which maybe sounds like it was a little more in private, as opposed to the previous assassination, which was in public. Es argo ves ha'arye. The way the Mefarshim translated it, some type of lavish palace, that also had, as Rashi and others explained, some type of golden lion adorning the palace, which I just found striking, because usually we associate, with any tribe, who do you associate a lion with? Yehuda, which is the kingdom of the south. So here in the kingdom of the north, why would a king have a huge lion? It's almost like the sign of the other team. I didn't see anybody talk about that. The Imo Chamishim Ish, he had 50 men with him, Mi B'nei Giladim. Well, there's actually a machlokas amongst the Mefarshim. Were these 50 men on the side of the assassin and they helped with the plan? Or were these 50 men on the side of the sitting king and they were also struck down? So machlokas, how to understand it. Vayimisuhu, regardless, this Pekach went ahead and killed the sitting king. Vayimloch tachtav, and he ruled in his place. Pasuch avav. V'yeser divrei Pekachya asher asa, the other aspects that what Pekachya did over his 2 years of being king. Hinam ksuvim al sefer divrei yamlel malchi Yisrael. They're written in the daily chronicles, and we're not even told that he gets buried. A lot of times we're told they get buried here. Not even told that he gets buried. Obviously, I mean, we imagine that he did go ahead and get buried. So this was our fourth king of the evening, and here we're about to be introduced to our fifth king of the evening. The people who missed tonight, they're not going to believe that we dealt with that many kings in one night. Pasuk of Zion. Bishnas chamishim ushtayim shana la'azarya melch Yuda. In the 52nd year of Azariah, the king of the south, the fifth king. So the stability is just, it's strike. And even though we always do that, we always introduce the king of the south, we always introduce the king of the south by saying what year it was of the king of the north, and we always introduce the king of the north by telling about the king of the south. It's just this time, it's never been that it's the same king in the south, same king in the south, same king in the south. It's just like glaring. It's just obvious. So in the 52nd year of Azariah, Malach Pekach ben Remaliyahu al Yisrael, Pekach the son of Remaliyahu was king over Klal Yisrael, B'Shamron, in the city of Shamron, Esrim Shana. And he was able to live as king and rule as king for 20 years. Pasuk of Ches. Vayas hara b'ene Hashem. He did what was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Lo sar Menachatos Yeravim ben Nevat, and he did not go away from the sins of Yeravim ben Nevat, Asher Hechti as Yisrael, who caused Klal Yisrael to sin. And here we hear of something seemingly under his reign, either he did things that were worse, or Klal Yisrael did things that were worse. But the unraveling of Klal Yisrael in the northern kingdom is about to come to fruition, that the beginning of the end is actually beginning. Pasuk Chaf Tes. Bimei Pekach Melech Yisrael, was in the days of Pekach, the king of Israel in the north. Ba Tiglas Pil Eser Melech Ashur. Tiglas Pil Eser, the king of Ashur, came. This time he was not invited. And it seems any of the money that was given from the north, their kingdom, to them, was totally ignored. And during the days of Pekach, it could be this was a process over some time. Vayikach es Iyun. This king of Ashur took over the city of Iyun, v'es Avel Beis Macha, and the city of Avel Beis Macha, v'es Yanoach, the city of Yanoach, v'es Kedesh, the city of Kedesh, v'es Chatzor, the city of Chatzor, v'es HaGilad, the city of Gilad, v'es HaGalila, and the Galilee, the Galil, Kol Eretz Naphtali, the entire portion of Naphtali, Vayaglem Ashura, and he exiled them to Ashur. The first Jews of the northern kingdom were exiled. The first wave of the 10 tribes being exiled from the land began under the reign of this Pekach, Ben Remaliyahu. There is a little bit of a debate. If you turn back to the sheet that I gave you, the third source on the sheet comes from the Medrash Rabbah on Eicha, the same way we have the Agadic Midrashim that were written by Amoraim, called Bereishis. We have Bereishis Rabbah and Shmos Rabbah. They were written by the same authors of the Gemara. There's also on the Megillas, so there's Esther Rabbah, and there's Rus Rabbah, so there's Eicha Rabbah. So the Medrash there asks a question, Ketzad Galu, how were the Jewish people in the Northern Kingdom exiled? So there's a machlokas on the order. Rebbe Lazar Omer, Shevet Ruvain, v'Shevet Gad, Galu Tchila. Rebbe Lazar was of the opinion that it was the tribes in the Transjordan that were exiled first. Ruvain and Gad. Why Chazisir Masha is not mentioned, I'm not sure. But that Ruvain and Gad were exiled first. Maybe because since Menashe had half of it in the regular Eretz Yisrael, so maybe we don't consider that a full type of galus. That's one opinion. Rav Shmuel ben Nachman Omer, Shevet Zvolun u'Shevet Naftali galu tchila. No, it was Zvolun and Naftali that were exiled first. So when we read our pasuk and we hear that Naftali was exiled, so the question is, at what stage was it? It seems that there were three stages to the exile. There's a machlokas in which stage was first. But there was the fact that the tribes that were on the eastern bank of the Jordan River, Ruvain and Gad, were exiled, that in one wave. Naphtali and Zvolun together were exiled in a second wave. Again, the order might be switched. And the third wave is going to come in Perek Yud Zayin, when unfortunately the rest of the 10 tribes are exiled. So the question is, how did it happen? And how did it happen? So the Vilna Gaon was of the opinion that, while we don't read about it in the Pasuk, Ruvain and Gad were actually exiled first. Ruvain and Gad were exiled first, and he brings a proof. His proof is in source 4. The Gemara in Erchin, Talmud Bavli, in Erchin, the Gemara is talking about why we don't have Yovel anymore. We don't have Yovel. We don't have Yovel. We have Shemitah. Last year was a Shemitah year. We don't have Yovel anymore. So why don't we have Yovel? So this Gemara is discussing that topic. Why we don't have the Jubilee, the 50th year. So in source 4 on the sheet, Titania, they have a Brisa. Mishagalu Shevet Ruvain v'Shevet Gad v'Chatzi Shevet Menashe Batlu Yovos. From the day that Ruvain, Gad, and half of Menashe were exiled, there was no longer a keeping of Yovel of the 50th Jubilee year. Why? Shenemar, the Pasuk says, it's a famous Pasuk because this is the Pasuk, not it's famous because it's in Sefer Vayikra. It's also famous because it's the Pasuk that's written on the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia. You can still go, wait online. This summer we went to Philadelphia, my family and I, but we didn't wait online because there was enough to see in Philadelphia without, it was a very long line to see the actual bell, and I don't know how much kids could appreciate that. But there's a pasuk written on the Liberty Bell. Rabbi Schechter always quotes it because he always says he grew up in Philadelphia and he used to take his kids, that's where they went on a trip or whatever, you can get in the car, go to Philadelphia. So he always talks about this, the pasuk written on the Liberty Bell. Ukrasim dror ba'aretz l'chol yoshveh, and liberty shall be declared in the land l'chol yoshveh, for all of its inhabitants. So the Gemara learns from that pasuk, bizman shekol yoshveh aleh, that you could have yovel when all the inhabitants are there. V'lo bizman shegalu miktsasim, but once certain members of Klal Yisrael have been exiled, there's no ability to keep yovel. That you need a physical representation of all 12 tribes living in their own portion in order to have Yovel. And so the Gemara says, this Brisa teaches, that from the time that Ruvain and Gad were exiled, there was no more Yovel. So says the Vilna Gaon, it must mean that even though we're reading this Pasuk in Malachim Beis, Perek Tesvav, that Naphtali was exiled, sounds like he was exiled first, this Brisa proves that they were, that the order was first Reuven and Gad, then came Naphtali along with Zvolun. Now, the biggest question you're going to ask me that I don't have an answer to is, it sounds like it was a pretty important detail that Reuven and Gad are exiled. So if it was true that they were exiled before the tribe of Naphtali in our Pasuk, so why doesn't our book Malachim tell us that? Question. No answer yet. But here, even if you would like to take the literalist view of just looking at our pasuk here, the gullus has started. The exile has started. That there's no longer Naphtali. I saw quoted by Rabbi Israel in his commentaries that there are some secular sources, Assyrian histories, that said that this wave of Gaulus was about 13,500 people. Which on the one hand sounds like a lot, but if it was, on the other hand, if it's all the tribe of Naphtali, it doesn't make so much sense that Naphtali only had that much. You would expect that they would have more. So again, I mean, you could explain that. I don't know how you explain it, but again, just letting out the source that it might have been about 13,500 in this wave of the exile. So he's only king for 2 years, and in his 2 years of being king, the losing of the 10 tribes, the fact that the 10 tribes are lost, so if you'd be a real, right, if you'd be asking Tanakh trivia, under whose kingship did the 10 tribes of Israel begin to be exiled, based on the literal understanding of the Pesukim, you'd have to say this Pekach, Ben Remaliyahu. What happens? Pasuk Lamed. Vayikshar Kesher. There's a plan of revolt. Hoshea ben Ela, Al Pekach ben Remaliyahu. I'm sorry, just before I mentioned that he was king for 2 years, that was a mistake. This Pekach was king for 20 years. It was during those 20 years of king that Naphtali was exiled. So there's a rebellion from Hoshea ben Ela against Pekach ben Remaliyahu. Vayakehu, he struck him down, he assassinated him. Vayimisu, he killed him. Vayimloch tachtov, and he ruled under him, he ruled in place of him. Bishnas Esrim liYosam ben Uzziah. In the 20th year of Yosam, the son of Uzziah, we heard about, but we didn't hear about fully. So, this king, this is now our sixth king of the night, is named Hoshea ben Ela, and he ends up being the last king of Malchus Yisrael. The last king of Malchus Yisrael is Hoshea ben Ela. We'll read about him because we're going to end up taking a pause and going back to the kingdom of the south. We've been dealing exclusively, you add up all the years, we've been dealing with the kingdom of the north for a while now. Now, if you're going to take a very literal understanding of the Pesukim, everyone's bothered by the following question. It says that this assassination of the sitting king took place in the 20th year of Yosam. But we're going to read, probably next time, the pasuk that says that Yosam, when we're introduced to Yosam formally as king, it says he was only king for 16 years. So why is it that the pasuk is saying that he was king for all 20? When he was only king for 16. So it seems to be rather difficult to deal with. You know, what it could mean is that since this Pekach, it was kind of declared that he had to be punished with a death, and that declaration took place during the time of Yosam was actually king, it's kind of recorded as if he was still king when it actually took place. Another explanation given is that the son of Yosam ends up being very wicked. His name is Achaz, and they didn't want to mention his name as much as possible. I think in the end the question seems to be a little stronger than some of the answers, which is something that it's happened before. This parsha concludes Pasuk Lamed Aleph. V'yeser divrei Pekach, the other aspects of Pekach, Pekach's rule as king, v'chol asher asa, everything that he did. Hinam ksuvim al sefer divrei yamim l'malchi Yisrael. They are listed in the book of Chronicles of the kings. So what happened is, in the last, we got to Pasuk Lamed Beis, and we started in Pasuk Ches. So in about 26 or 24 psukim, we went through five full kings, and we're now in the sixth king. And and during that period of time, there were three kings in Malchus Yisrael, in Malchus Yehuda, with the third king being just the beginning of his reign. So it's basically only two kings. You match up two kings and six kings, it's very glaring. So the two things in total that we see is, number one, it's almost as if these two ideas are not mutually exclusive. They're actually dependent on each other. That through all these assassinations and the instability of the government, that also meant that the level of Klal Yisrael was also going down, that the final punishment was now coming. And that perhaps you would take a step back, and let's say you're Klal Yisrael, and you witness whatever the list was, five, six cities are totally taken over by a king. And then an entire portion of a tribe is exiled. So Chacham, you should, right? The Gemara talks about that if something happens wrong in your own life, you're supposed to be yafash beish b'maisav. You're supposed to look at what you did and do tshuva. So forget about an individual. This is Klal Yisrael losing a tribe, right? Naphtali's gone. So the other tribes, done, and Menasha and Yisachar should be sitting there and saying, "What's going on? We need to change. This is not working." But yet that doesn't happen. So the two things that are significant for us that we saw tonight is, number one, the instability of king and assassination and just searching for power, and none of these kings being given the mandate by Hashem. And the second is that the decision of Menachem to peacefully negotiate or peacefully engage with Ashur ends up turning on the country when Ashur comes to exile. This first wave of the exile, as the Gemara in Yerushalmi says, there was a second wave, and when we get to Perek Yud Zayin, unfortunately, we have to read about the third wave of the exile and the end of Malchus Yisrael. What we'll do next time is we'll swing back to the kingdom of the south and the next king, which is Yosam, the son of Uzziah.